Hello and welcome to the Talking News for St Albans, Harpenden and the surrounding area. I'm Bill and this is the Red Saturn programme for Saturday, September 20th, 2025. I do hope you're all well. You may recognise the music this week as it's by, you guessed it, the Beatles. Or more specifically, George Harrison, who composed some of their greatest songs, but generally with rather less fanfare than his bandmates, Lennon and McCartney. You'll be able to hear more of George's songs later in the programme, but have a listen to While My Guitar Gently Weeps, as played at the Concert of Bangladesh at Madison Square Garden on August the 1st, 1971. There's a fantastic duel between George and Eric Clapton, which is not on the original studio recording. It's well known that Eric had offered George a lift to the EMI studios, in his Ferrari no less, where the Beatles were recording the White Album in 1968, and George came up with the idea of inviting Eric to play the lead guitar part on this song, which he did off the cuff and with virtually no rehearsal. His natural brilliance shines with full effect on this track, forever part of the Beatles' oeuvre. But when it came to preparing this live performance 3 years later, George wasn't convinced that Eric would be up to the job because of his struggles with drug addiction and alcohol. So George worked up his own lead guitar part just in case. Come the day, they both played brilliantly, dueling with one another on the long instrumental tail of this great song. We'll be right back.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now, back to the programme. This week, as always, we start off with the news stories from the Hearts Advertiser. This will be followed by our selection of radio listings, and then the audio-described TV listings. 10 Today is up next, our series of gentle exercise routines to help keep you active at home. Then we'll have another of George Harrison's Beatles songs, which will be followed by our regular Events This Week in History feature, and then some famous birthdays. Sounds of Nature is next, this week with Chris Watson, who spent 40 years recording wildlife for the BBC. Then from the Hearts Life Archive, we'll hear about the world's largest news printing facility in Broxbourne. We start with the news, and our readers this week are Jenny, Liz, Lucy and Sarah.
Hello, this is Lucy, and it's great to be with you today. Our first article is titled Money Meant for New Homes to be Diverted. Money that was due to be spent redeveloping empty garage sites in St Albans into council homes will now be spent buying homes to tackle a growing homelessness crisis. Spending by St Albans City and District Council on homelessness is set to be £2 million higher than expected across the 2025-2026 financial year, with 93 households, including 57 with children, currently accommodated in hotels. Councillors on the Authority's Housing and Inclusion Committee on Monday, that was September the 15th, agreed that £2.86 million that had been allocated to redeveloping the Frobisher Road Drake's Drive garage site into around a dozen council homes will instead be spent on buying homes that can be used as temporary accommodation for homeless families. Plans for the Frobisher Road Drake's Drive site have not been abandoned, with money still set aside to review alternative options for its redevelopment. A report prepared for councillors said, "These include modular accommodation or non-typical construction methods as a way of delivering more temporary accommodation properties to address future demand." David Reeval, the council's strategic housing manager, told councillors that some degree of preparatory work had been done for the garage development, but no planning application had been submitted. "Using the funds to buy more temporary accommodation would reduce our reliance on hotels," he added. Mr. Reeval continued, "We will revisit the Drake's Drive Frobisher Road garage site project in 2026-27 to see whether we can develop a more bespoke temporary accommodation option on that site. We're exploring all opportunities inside and outside the district to try to increase our temporary accommodation supply to reduce not only the financial cost of using hotels, but the human cost of customers being placed in hotels." A total of 227 households in St Albans are currently staying in temporary accommodation, including those in hotels. Committee Chairman Councillor Simon Johns said, "We are in a perfect storm of being a highly sought-after commuter area with high property values. We're trying to look at every single social and technological and procedural process to try and manage demand and optimise our supply. The officers are using quite creative approaches to try and give people affordable but dignified temporary accommodation. To put a family into hotel accommodation absolutely magnifies their stress, and that's not something we want to continue." Councillor Sawa Shamsha described the situation as really bad and said that staying in hotels would affect the health and education of families placed there. Simon Smith, the council's assistant director for housing, said the authority is working flat out to find solutions to the problem, including using council-owned properties and working with housing associations and other partners, including the government. Linda Parker, the council's assistant director for finance, said there is a very significant financial risk for the council in tackling homelessness.
Hello, I'm Sarah. Old Toll House pub exceeding expectations. Pub going strong with uptick in turnover since June rebranding. The publican at a St Albans pub says they've exceeded expectations following a significant rebrand in June. More than 3 months on from a six-figure investment, the Old Toll House is still going strong under its new identity. We sat down with publican Tim Skinner to find out why the pub had seen an uptick in turnover since reopening to the public. He began, "The best part has been the welcome from the community. People have been so receptive. Change can be hard, but everyone's been supportive. Whoever you are, whatever you're here for, you should all feel welcome." The club's inclusive atmosphere has seemingly worked, with a fresh variety of clientele heading to the venue. All sorts have come into the pub now. We have people having a bottle of wine in the afternoon, some popping in for tea and coffee, and others coming in after work for a pint, Tim continued. Of course, people still remember the old Rat's Castle. We hear it all the time, but we're aiming to make the place more modern and more welcoming. And for some, it will always be the Rats, and that's fine. We've tried to stay true to what it is. At its heart, it's a village pub in a neighbourhood. We took what worked at the old pub and have also tried new things. The old toll house has also seen a strong uptake in their live sports offering already, and Tim predicts that this will keep building. Turning to the future, the pub is launching an acoustic showcase night every Thursday from October. The showcase will feature local performers and will curate and promote the acts, said Tim. On Saturdays, we'll have bands and DJs too. That way, people don't need to trek into town if they don't want to. There's a reason to stay local. The publican extended his gratitude to South Hart's Campaign for Real Ale for its support thus far, with representatives visiting the pub and helping to add two real ales on tap. That's brought in a new crowd too, Tim added. Despite being a wet-only pub, the Toll House will soon be teaming up with a nearby Indian restaurant, Grand Cholas, for a bespoke menu. Available for game days, curry wraps and sides will form part of the collaboration, which Tim described as a win-win for both businesses. The publican concluded, "It's been exciting and challenging so far, and we're only just getting started."
Hi, this is Liz. My first reading today is about water voles being reintroduced to the River Lea. Water voles have been reintroduced to the River Lea for the first time in 20 years. Hearts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust reintroduced 100 of the threatened mammals to a stretch of the Upper River Lea near Wheathampstead on September the 4th. Water voles were once common across Hertfordshire, and the reintroduction marks the species' return to the river after more than 20 years. Populations have dropped by 90% across the UK since the 1960s due to habitat loss and predation by invasive American mink. Josh Calms, Water Vole Conservation Officer at Hearts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust, said, "These animals are vital to healthy wetlands. Their burrowing and grazing helps maintain riverbanks and improve biodiversity." And there's a lovely picture on the article of a water vole.
Hello, I'm Jenny, and my first article today is Brighter Futures for the Former Homeless, new programme for essential employability skills. People who have experienced homelessness are building brighter futures with the help of a new training programme. Emmaus, Hertfordshire, based in St Albans, partnered with North Hearts College to deliver a tailored course through the college's Heart Learning and Development Service. The programme focused on practical and personal development, covering topics such as CV writing, interview skills, technology, customer service, self-presentation and confidence building. Chrissy Phelps, Community Learning Engagement Officer at Heart Learning and Development, said, "Heart Learning and Development were excited to team up with the Mayor of St Albans in delivering a tailored two-day programme designed to equip companions with essential life, social and employability skills. This initiative reflects our shared commitment to encourage opportunities and strengthen community partnerships, supporting individuals as they prepare for independent living." The sessions were designed to be flexible and empathetic, taking into account the often traumatic experiences of the participants. One companion, Mark, said, I found the course really interesting, with some good advice and tips on employability skills, as well as learning about British values of democracy, rule of law, individual liberty, mutual respect and tolerance of others. Another, Fran, said, I really liked the confidence building and the course leader Kim's approach. She was very bubbly and got people out of their shells. One companion was a little reluctant to open up. By the end of the course, he was happy to contribute with a few ideas, thanks to Kim's friendly encouragement. Emmaus Hertfordshire provides a home, support and work opportunities for up to 39 people who have experienced homelessness and social exclusion. Harley Scott, Community Support Manager at Emmaus Hertfordshire, said, A huge thank you to the team from Heart Learning and Development for delivering a very worthwhile course which was tailored to the needs of the people we support. This was no ordinary course, as it covered a host of areas that were of specific benefit to our companions, recognising their unique circumstances and equipping them with the tools they need to move forward both in the work environment and on a personal level.
Next up, the Disco Sisters, who are providing safe spaces for women. A disco-inspired project aimed at creating joyous, safe spaces for women has received support from nearby businesses. Disco Sisters is a new St Albans-based venture launched by Carolyn Howe-Jigo, a mum and entrepreneur. The event seeks to reinvent clubbing for women, with features such as women-only attendance, an early start and finish, women-led bar and door staff, mass karaoke, and a buddy system for women attending alone. This week saw Disco Sisters dancers Holly and Holly, that's one with a Y and one with an IE, take to the streets, including visits to businesses to spread the disco vibe. Carolyn, who also runs a complementary health business focused on women, said, Disco Sisters celebrate sisterhood and dancing and singing with a girls-only vibe. These are events for all women, no matter your age, your background or your shoe size. This is your new girls' night out. Women, and particularly women of all ages, are sometimes excluded by the modern clubbing landscape, and we want to change that. The early start and finish means people can still sparkle the next day. You don't lose time to tiredness or a hangover, so women and mums can get on with their lives, be it looking after their family or doing some exercise. Carolyn launched Disco Sisters with business partner Sam Baker, who runs a chain of children's nurseries in Hertfordshire. Their debut event is set for October the 11th at the Big Chill Bar in King's Cross, featuring music by DJ Sally Kay. There are plans for more events across London and nationwide. Carolyn said, We want to be a movement for women's empowerment everywhere and the right to enjoy ourselves without hassle. The rise in harassment and spiking in clubs and bars and abuse against women on social media is particularly worrying, but it also makes us want to fight back. And Disco Sisters is a way of doing that in a positive, empowering, celebratory way. The Hub on Verulam, Flowerbox and Sucker Punch helped get people on their feet dancing this week.
St Albans Pub in the Park rebrand. The team behind St Albans' popular Pub in the Park has announced a festival makeover for 2026. Soundbites Festival, a reimagined celebration of food, drink, music and community, is launching next year. While the name is changing, the spirit remains the same. Soundbites will combine food and drink experiences with more music, more acts and more energy across multiple stages. Attendees are told to expect everything from fire pits, street food and Michelin stars to DJs, live bands and party favourites. Chris Hughes, one of the festival's founders, shared a message for the community. He said, St Albans is a great festival city. Soundbites is being designed with St Albans in mind after lots of helpful feedback and research. We're saying goodbye to a name, not the feeling. Soundbites will carry the same magic into the future. St Albans has been home to Pub in the Park since 2019, with thousands of visitors enjoying the city's mix of food and music. Soundbites Festival will return from September the 4th to 6th, 2026, offering audiences a fresh format inspired by changing tastes and new ways to celebrate together. Further UK destinations will be revealed in the coming months.
The date for St Albans' popular Gin and Jazz Festival has been confirmed for 2025. On the evening of Friday, October the 3rd, businesses on the city's historic George Street will once again open for late-night shopping and line the streets with gin bars. With live jazz music and fantastic food, the free event, which is organised by St Albans City Centre BID and George Street Retail Association, promises to be as popular as ever this year. From 6pm to 10:30pm, businesses will be setting up exclusive outside bars, providing a variety of gin blends and flavours alongside other tipples and non-alcoholic drinks. Some shops will also extend their special offerings inside for customers to enjoy while they browse. Last year, attendees were entertained by the sounds of jazz music provided by live musicians from Take 3 Jazz and New River Dixielanders. It is not yet confirmed who will be performing this year, but more information is expected to be announced by the organisers soon.
Pizzeria confirms official opening. An artisan pizzeria in St Albans city centre has confirmed an official opening date. Pizzeos has arrived at Victoria Street, moving into the unit previously occupied by a short-lived coffee shop and smart tech. Following teasers in November last year, the restaurant has finally begun a soft opening period to fine-tune their menu. An Instagram post by Pizzeos confirmed customers can dine in and take away ahead of a formal launch on September 30th. We kindly ask for your patience and understanding should there be any minor shortcomings along the way, the post added. Our goal is to become a place where St Albans can enjoy delicious pizza and warm hospitality for many years to come. We sincerely thank you for your support and look forward to celebrating our grand opening together. The eatery offers a variety of stone-baked pizzas promised to be crafted with fresh ingredients. Pizzeos is also permitted to sell alcohol following an application in late 2024. Despite being closed on Mondays, the pizzeria opens between midday and 10pm from Sunday to Thursday and midday to 11pm on Fridays and Saturdays.
Parking now, and no providers are currently offering a solution to parking cliff edge. Fixing a cliff edge that means St Albans drivers pay higher than usual parking charges in the late afternoon and early evening will be complex, the District Council's deputy leader has said. Councillor Helen Campbell, chairwoman of St Albans City and District Council's Public Realm Committee, told councillors last week that finding a solution to the problem is more complex than it might at first appear. The issue was raised by Councillor Matt Cowley, who pointed out that people arriving at car parks shortly before 6:30pm, when a flat evening charge begins, currently have to pay for both a daytime session and an evening session. Parking after 6:30pm costs £2, regardless of length of stay, but parking before 6:30pm is charged based on length of stay. It means that somebody arriving at, for example, 6:10pm and staying for an hour has to pay £4.10, the daytime charge on top of the evening charge. Councillor Cowley said this presents a clear cliff edge, which will unfairly penalise people who are parking beyond 6:30pm and encourage them to use other parking locations, contrary to the council's policies. It can't possibly be the council's intention that people arriving at 6:20pm and leaving at 6:40pm should pay £4.10, when if they had arrived 10 minutes later, they'd have paid £2. He called for the council to find a way of softening the cliff edge. In response, Councillor Campbell said it was a very valid point, but added, "The technology and the machines just don't allow for a simple solution at the moment." She continued, "It's something that we've been aware of. It's not intended to cause people difficulties. It's something I'd love to find a solution to." This council is one of very few that has this kind of evening charge. It was brought in to help people as a flat fee. There's a no man's land in the middle, and people miss out the closer they are to the cut-off point between the day tariff and the start of the evening tariff. However, finding any possible resolution to this, if indeed there is one, is pretty complex, and there are financial considerations obviously to be brought in. I think it probably is affecting a small number of people. People who come in for the day come in for certain purposes. They're coming in for shopping, they go home when the shops are closed, or they're coming in for the evening, perhaps for an evening event at the arena or one of the other centres. Chris Trail, a strategic director at the council, said the flat rate evening charge was intended to help the customer as best we can. While she admitted to the clunkiness of the current system, she added, "It's as good as it gets with the technology thus far." Robin Ray, an assistant director at the council, said the evening tariff currently brings in around £225,000 a year. Asked whether new equipment would help solve the problem, he said, "No current providers can provide this service. We're just in the process of procuring a new app to see whether Pay by Phone might get it again, or it might be a different provider like Ringo or any of the others. But presently, no one can do it."
Audi stolen in keyless theft from driveway. A car has been stolen from the driveway of a St Albans home in a keyless theft. Between Sunday, September 14th at 4 p.m. and 7:30 a.m. on Monday, September the 15th, a vehicle was taken from a property in Winch's Farm Drive. The victim reported a blue Audi was parked on their drive and overnight someone took it without the keys. Officers offered the following advice to prevent vehicle crime. Ensure you lock doors and shut windows and sunroofs when you leave your vehicle unattended. Always remove keys from the ignition when you're not with the vehicle. When parking, remember to set your immobiliser or alarm or use an approved steering lock or gear lever clamp. Never leave valuables in your vehicle, not even in the glove box or boot, and keep all possessions out of sight, even coats, sunglasses and carrier bags. Be aware of your keys. Don't leave them visible on a windowsill or next to your front door where they could be hooked through the letterbox, or the keyless signal can be received by a relay device. If you have a keyless entry car, use a signal blocking bag and consider using additional trackers, steering wheel locks or ghost immobilisers. Finally, store car ownership documents at home, not in your car. Please be vigilant and report any suspicious activities in the area.
Museum reopens with new cutting-edge roof. St Albans Museum has reopened with a cutting-edge feature following its closure for essential repairs. The popular site in Verulamium Park was temporarily shut at the end of August and has announced its relaunch with a new roof. A Facebook post by the museum read, "We're back. Verulamium Museum reopens today with a new sustainable roof, thanks to support from Arts Council England and St Albans City and District Council. This cutting-edge installation is only the second of its kind in England and the first by any UK council," the post added. Further repairs were deemed to be required following scheduled roof works earlier this year, which identified issues with ceilings in the gallery. The District Council said it chose a quieter period to complete the works and rebooked any visitors who had tickets during the closure. Built on the site of one of the largest Roman cities in Britain, Verulamium Museum is filled with ancient treasures and mosaics. Exhibits explore Roman life, allowing visitors to immerse themselves in recreated Roman rooms and admire the craftsmanship of intricate large-scale mosaics on display. The Roman Mosaic and Hypocaust and St Albans Museum and Gallery is open as normal from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. every day.
Mobile vaccination vans launched to boost take-up in Hertfordshire. Vaccines are hitting the road in a new push to boost uptake in Hertfordshire. The East of England Community and School-Aged Immunisation Service, CSAIS, has acquired two mobile vaccination vans to help reach more vulnerable people of all ages thanks to funding from NHS England. The vans will deliver a range of vaccines, including those for flu, COVID-19, RSV, HPV, hepatitis B, and tuberculosis. Caroline Shepherd, Assistant Director for CSAIS, said, "Our mobile vaccination units will be visiting communities where there has been historically low uptake, so we can encourage more and more people to have their jabs. We want to make it as easy as possible for people to get their vaccines this autumn and protect themselves and their loved ones against getting seriously ill." The vans will offer vaccines for children under 5, teenagers, pregnant women and older people. Seasonal flu vaccinations are currently being offered to pregnant women and children aged 2 to 16. Dr. Ellie Powers, Head of Public Health Commissioning for Immunisation at NHS England East, said, "We know accessibility of services is key to helping families in our region take up the protection of these vaccines."
And now St Albans MP Daisy Cooper reflects on the last year in Parliament and what the near future holds ahead of party conference period. "Sometimes the seasons in weather mirror the seasons in politics. And right now, as the wind picks up, the rain lashes down and the nights draw in, the political climate feels just as bleak. It's hard to believe that only 14 months ago, under sunnier skies and in a more optimistic mood, we held a general election. The country had one clear mission: to kick out the Conservatives. From every corner of the UK, voters sent a message. They were done with sleaze and scandal, done with revolving doors and reshuffles, and done with economic mismanagement. We wanted change. We wanted integrity. We wanted competence. But fast forward to today, and Labour stands accused of the very same failings. In just over a year, this government has stumbled from one crisis to the next. Mistake after mistake, U-turn after U-turn. The promise of change is wearing thin, because despite any claims of delivery, people feel like it's just more of the same. To be fair, it's not quite the daily psychodrama we endured under the last Conservative administration, but make no mistake, this government is struggling to focus on the issues that matter most to people. I recently ran my 2025 health survey, and I'm grateful to the hundreds of constituents who took the time to respond. The message was loud and clear. People are still fighting to get GP appointments, still waiting too long for NHS surgery, still battling for support with special educational needs. Others raised concerns about crime and immigration. I know all too well from my surgeries and door knocking, these are not abstract policy debates. I know that behind every survey response are people's real lives and real struggles. And every response is a reminder why we are MPs. And every response is a reminder why we MPs are here, to make things better, to focus on what matters. And we could do with more of that from this government. After a bruising week for the government, Prime Minister Keir Starmer now faces a critical decision, appointing a new ambassador to the United States just days before President Trump arrives for a state visit. It must be someone who will stand up to Donald Trump, not cozy up to him and his cronies. Meanwhile, Labour must also choose a new deputy leader. But as the scandals, the reshuffles and economic mistakes pile up, the government's credibility is taking a hit, and so is the Prime Minister's. With MPs away from Westminster for the party conference season, the timing couldn't be worse. Whilst we all feel autumn's chill, for Starmer, it must seem like winter is coming.
Season kicks off with a winner. Review of The Company of Ten's The Unfriend at the Abbey Theatre. Opting for Stephen Moffat's light-hearted comedy, The Unfriend, to launch their new season is proving to be a dead cert winner for The Company of Ten. For while it's not in Ackburn's league, the tale of the houseguest with a very dubious past clearly slayed the packed audience in the Abbey Theatre on Saturday night. And it's not surprising, really, because The Unfriend is a very funny play with some great one-liners. Additionally, there's a deeper theme as director Catherine Barry points out in her programme notes, which is how difficult it is for the middle class to be anything but polite, whatever the circumstances. It opens on a cruise ship, where married couple Peter and Debbie meet the pushy American Elsa Jean Krakowski. Unsurprisingly, the next time she appears, it's as a self-invited houseguest at their home. Played out on the usual excellent Company of Ten set, devised for this production by Judith Goodman, the couple struggle with what Debbie has discovered about Elsa, which is brought home for the audience by a helpful video, purporting to be direct from Google. The Unfriend is a play that requires split-second comic timing, and in Deborah Heath as Debbie and James Morrell as Peter, they have the perfect pairing. There's excellent rapport between the two as they struggle to cope not only with their dubious guest, but also their two teenage children and their boring neighbour from hell, a hilarious performance from Keith McDougall. Victoria Lenzer as Elsa is a first-rate casting, characteristically larger than life, well able to divert or explain every accusation thrown at her. And unsurprisingly, her cod philosophy wins over their offspring, Alex, a first-rate acting debut from Deborah's real-life son, Lex Cameron. And daughter Rosie, played on Saturday evening by Emma Gillespie, making her first appearance for the Company of Ten. The role is being shared by Sophie Parker. Completing the cast is Connor Booker as PC Junkin, another who falls under Elsa's spell. Catherine Barry is an experienced Company of Ten director and knows exactly how to get the maximum laughs out of the Unfriend. She and her team deserve to take a bow for a job well done, which quite literally slayed the audience.
Two food outlets come top in the UK. The pair have the biggest social media followings. A pair of St Albans-based food vans have been named among the top two in the UK. New statistics from Vans Direct have uncovered the country's most popular food vans. The research, which analysed social media followings of all British Street Food Award winners and runners-up over the last 5 years, found that St Albans Peddling Pizza has the largest online presence with more than 200,000 followers across Facebook and Instagram. What started as a redundancy turned into a recipe for success for Adam Atkins. The former delivery driver launched Peddling Pizzas in 2016 with nothing but a bike trailer and a portable wood-fired oven. Fast forward a few years, and Adam now serves up his signature Neapolitan-style creations from a custom yellow Chevy truck, a vehicle crowned best-looking food truck at the British Street Food Awards. Adam live streams his trading. Close behind the pizza van, in second place, is another St Albans sensation, Waffle Wands, which tempts its 165,000 followers with an irresistible menu of classic desserts and sweet treats. Sisters Sophie and Lauren launched Waffle Wands in 2018, turning childhood nostalgia into a viral sensation. Their signature treat is fluffy waffle spirals on sticks, drenched in sauces and stacked with toppings. With a clientele that includes the England football team and Reading Festival, the brand operates in the Maltins shopping centre after opening in July 2024. St Albans City Football Club favourite Chicken George also made the list in third place with 94,900 followers across all platforms.
England flags a worrying trend. A husband and wife who have lived in St Albans for 11 years have raised concern about the worrying trend of England flags appearing on road markings. Marshalwick residents Asad and Shazaf Naqvi have both experienced little to no issues with xenophobia or racism while living in the area, but are worried about where the community may be headed. Asad highlighted St George's crosses that had been painted on Park Road recently, which now present Danger on a school route that he has driven through for many years. The crossing is near St. Albans High School and Maple Primary School. The 47-year-old solicitor is a second-generation immigrant who is Pakistani and English. He said, "I think it's a worrying trend. It's no longer just a symbol of England as a country. It's not just a flag. It represents a movement that is very anti-immigrant. St. Albans is not an immigrant community, but everyone's welcome. And this, the flags, is trying to exclude certain people. It's not just our ethnicity, it's everyone." Assad believes allowing these symbols to stay up, particularly in the form of graffiti, was encouraging the movement. Previously, the district council said it is treating England flags painted on road markings across St. Albans as graffiti. It is also in contact with Hertfordshire County Council, the Highways Authority, about the incidents and is following their guidance. Assad understands why the district council cannot just remove England flags, but highlighted that the crosses were still obscuring the zebra crossing on Park Road, making it an ongoing safety issue. "I've driven past that road almost every day over the last 10 years. I know it's there. You can't see the zebra crossing clearly anymore. It's not clearly marked because there are two giant red crosses obscuring the white contrast from the road. Drivers are going to struggle to see it, particularly now we're getting into autumn and days getting darker." A spokesman for St Albans City and District Council told the Hearts Advertiser, "Any highways issue can be reported to the County Council on its online fault reporting tool. Where there is graffiti on council-owned property, the policy, as clearly stated on a website, is to remove it, no matter the content. This is to maintain the appearance of the built environment and deter people from defacing it. We do not make exceptions to this rule, so we have asked the district street cleaning contractor to proceed as normal." Hearts County Council recently confirmed, if its highways team become aware of unauthorised painting of roundabouts, they will refresh the official road markings as part of the programmed works.
Now, from Harking Back with Emma Brennan, who writes about radio in the good old days, and she says, "I have been overwhelmed by the response to my column on radio, with so many of you sharing my passion for the medium. Lots of you remember the man in black, including John Carus, who told me my mum was an avid radio and TV addict, and she told me how frightened she was listening to the man in black in her youth. He was Valentine Dial and had a superbly rich voice used very effectively to put the wind up many radio listeners. Ray Harvey has a list of radio favourites he listened to in the 1950s, including Hancock's Half Hour, Desert Island Discs, Life with the Lions and Top of the Form. Gerald Taylor's favourite, meanwhile, was The Goon Show. He said, as a 1946er, radio was the key entertainment in my childhood, with the BBC's Light programme and Home Service. You mentioned being a bit scared by the man in black. Well, with me, it was Journey into Space with Jet Morgan and Lemmy. How could it be that I had to listen to it with my fingers thrust in my ears, but not so much that I couldn't hear what was going on? The reader picture came from Maureen Tigwell, who told me, I couldn't bear to part with my parents' old radio. I have so many memories of listening to Radio Luxembourg and two-way family favourites on a Sunday lunchtime with messages to the soldiers at BFPO in Germany. I think they played I'll Be Home by Pat Boone every week. And there is indeed a picture of this amazing wooden radio from Maureen Tigwell with all of the old dials on it, which of course you don't really need anymore with our digital contraptions, but it's a great picture.
Faith Focus, Finding Inner Calm. Quaker Steve Clough discusses finding your inner calm and listening without comment. In our St Albans Road this last week or so, there have been workers replacing the railings at the school, next door having significant renovations done, and then they came and replaced the street light outside our house. I mean, I'm delighted the council is doing this work, but it does make for a difficult time as I work from home. One thing I have learned from my time as a Quaker is the importance of finding some inner calm. Some people seem to think that we sit in silence, cut off from the world, for our hour on a Sunday, but that is not what I experience. I sit there listening, trying to hear that of God in us, and that of God in others, and that of God in the blown exhaust of the car passing by, which is quite hard work. It is about listening, however difficult it can be at times, and taking in all that is around us. Faith is something that has to work in the real world, in the world on Monday as well as Sunday. It has to work in the office as well as in church. Recently, I was at Greenbelt Festival, a Christian faith-based festival of music and ideas. There is some criticism of it, in that it is not Christian, because it welcomes people of all gender, sexuality, without question, people of all faiths and none. Because it is a place to listen, to hear ideas presented in new ways. I heard music that was strongly feminist, talks that were about the poor, Gaza, managing our world. I may not have agreed with them all, but I was there, as in meeting, to listen, to see what there was of God in them. And to a large extent, there was much of God, even among those who would not claim a faith. That is my Quaker faith, listening without comment, interruption or critique, and seeing what I can find there that is of God to me. And sometimes, as we say, that is ministry for other friends. But I learned a lot. I was uplifted, and I found new aspects of the divine. That is all I can ask for. Steve Clough lives in Fleetville and worships with the Quakers in Upper Latimer Road, St. Albans.
Now for a look at some of this coming week's radio highlights, starting with Saturday, September 20th. And The Flight of Eric Strap is a poignant comedy drama by Ronnie Smith, starring Stratford Johns as blind gangster Bottles Doone, who is trying to hunt down gambler Eric Strap, played by George Cole. Broadcast in honour of the centenary of John's birth, it's Radio 4 Extra, The Flight of Eric Strap, 6 a.m. Saturday morning, or if you prefer, 5 p.m. in the afternoon. More drama on Radio 4. The concluding episode of The Magic Mountain, adapted from Thomas Mann's 1924 novel, Der Zonneberg. Why, when young Hugh Casthorpe visits a sanatorium in the mountains, does he find that he cannot leave? Radio 4, 3 p.m. for The Magic Mountain. Opera on 3 is Mozart's La Clemenza di Tito, sung in Italian. It tells the story of how Vitellia, daughter of deposed Roman Emperor Vitellius, plots vengeance against her father's usurper, the Emperor Titus. Opera on 3, 6 p.m. on Radio 3. And lastly for Saturday comes Sir Alex Ferguson, Made in Govan. Sir Alex and BBC radio presenter Mike Sweeney go back a long way. They used to play football together, bonded over their love of music from the 1960s. And here they talk about Sir Alex as a young man from Govan on the Clyde and the influences that shaped his extraordinary football career. Sir Alex Ferguson, Made in Govan, Radio 4, 8 o'clock, Saturday night. Sunday, September 21st. And Kirsty Walk reunites those involved in the 1999 reform of the House of Lords in this week's The Reunion, 10 a.m, Radio 4. Scotland Wants You looks at Scottish attitudes to immigration. Does the country's reputation for openness align with current attitudes? And does this image mask deeper ambivalence? Nick Eardley investigates Scotland Wants You, 1:30, Radio 4, Sunday afternoon. For a soundscape exploring the impact of 200 years of railways on the modern world, incorporating archive materials and contemporary voices, poet Katrina Porteous walks an old passenger route, revealing her family's connections to County Durham's mines and railways. How trains shrank time and space, 7:15, Sunday night, Radio 4. On to programmes then that are broadcast each day, each weekday, at the same time. Same time, same radio station, Monday to Friday. Book of the Week is A History of England in 25 Poems. Catherine Clarke reads from her book, which explores the ways in which poetry has shaped English identity. 11:45 every morning on Radio 4 for Book of the Week. Caroline Steele and producer Florian Bohr go in search for a place on Earth untouched by humans, and in the first episode, with the help of NASA's scientific visualization team, explore maps that reveal humanity's astonishing global footprint. Looking for No Man's Land, Radio 4, every day this week, 1:45. Now this one's inspired by a 1950s true story. Penelope Keith stars as wealthy Sussex resident Miss Bessemer, who campaigns to halt the closure of her local railway. Miss Bessemer saves the train a choice of times each weekday on Radio 4 Extra at 3:45 in the afternoon or 9:45 at night. This week, Composer of the Week is Spanish composer Joaquin Rodrigo, 1901 to 1999. He lost his eyesight at just 3 years due to diphtheria, and he's responsible for one of the most instantly recognisable works for classical guitar, the Concerto d'Aranjou, or Orange Juice. Composer of the Week, 4 o'clock, every weekday, Radio 3. In the essay this week, psychotherapist and author Philippa Perry explores the potential power of musical therapy. She meets Donald Weatherick, who works with adults experiencing the most serious mental health conditions. The essay, Music Heals, 9:45, all week, Radio 3. Book of Bedtime is Philip Roth's 2004 modern classic, The Plot Against America, 10:45 every night on Radio 4, and 5 programmes from the Great Live series, starting with entertainer Bruce Forsyth, 11:30pm every night on Radio 4 all week. Let's go back to the radio highlights individually for each day. Monday, September 22nd, and the drama Mrs. Bridge continues. Mr. and Mrs. Bridge find that Europe is very different from Kansas City, following memorable experiences in London, Paris and Rome. Mrs. Bridge, 2:45, Radio 4, Monday afternoon. And the final episode of this series of Just a Minute has Julian Clary, Rachel Paris, Patterson Joseph and Paul Merton trying to speak for 60 seconds on topics including Paddington Bear and shoulder pads. 6:30 for Just a Minute, Radio 4. Tuesday, September 23rd. And Sophia Gaylor-Smith concludes her university's challenge series by asking, what is the value of a degree? With AI, financial pressures and the nightmare job market, is it still worth getting one? Or are there alternatives? 9:30 Tuesday morning, Radio 4. Newly pregnant Carrie tries to maintain her calm when in an ambulance control room she has to work with an AI system that doesn't always understand. Lifelines is the drama on Radio 4 at 2:15 and it continues Wednesday at the same time. Back to Tuesday, History Heroes. This week shines a light on the ways in which actor Katharine Hepburn challenged the conventions of Hollywood's studio system. History Heroes, 3 o'clock, Radio 4. File on 4 goes this week inside the world of migrant hotels and provides a unique insight into a story that is dominating the news headlines. File on 4 investigates, 8 o'clock, Radio 4 on Tuesday. And as it is a Tuesday, in touch with Peter White, the latest for the blind and partially sighted, 8:40pm, Radio 4. Wednesday, September 24th, and nearly 40 years after Paul Simon's Graceland album, with its joyful Black South Africa music and Simon's lyricism, how is it viewed today when issues of cultural boycotts, cultural appropriation and cancel culture are so prevalent? Paul Simon's Political Storm, 9:30, Wednesday morning, Radio 4. And St Paul's Church in Knightsbridge in London is the venue for Radio 3 in concert that includes music by Elgar, Holst and Britten, plus the world premiere of Elemental, a work for choir, harp and percussion by Lancashire-born composer John Pickard and dedicated to the BBC singers. Radio 3 in concert, 7:30pm on Wednesday night on Radio 3. Thursday, September 25th. And Love Across the Ages tackles love between two Muslim men from Iran in 1815 through to modern-day Bradford. Danyal and Saif meet in a bookshop in Bradford and both are drawn to a book of poetry by Abu Nawas. But only one copy is left. Who will be the lucky owner? Love Across the Ages is the drama on Radio 4 at 2:15 on Thursday afternoon. And tucked away in a wooded valley on the outskirts of Bristol is a woodland nature reserve, Snuff Mills. Helen Mark discovers what lies beneath the trees, a now peaceful place with a history of heavy industry and where stone quarrying has left behind a stunning playground for climbers. But where does the name Snuff Mills come from, and is it really the most haunted place in Bristol? You can find out more. Open Country, Radio 4, 3 o'clock, Thursday afternoon. Finally, Friday, September 26th, and it's the final episode of Limelight, Mother Cover. Gwen has to do one final task in this drama on Radio 4, but just as she thinks things are over, she realises she's in more danger than ever. Limelight, Mother Cover, 2:15, Radio 4. Friday night is, of course, Music Night, you got it, and it comes live from London's Royal Festival Hall with the BBC Concert Orchestra, playing music from TV period dramas including Bridgerton, Downton Abbey, Pride and Prejudice, Sanderton and others. The concert starts 7:30pm, Radio 3. And finally, at 1am, so slightly into Saturday morning, Julie Andrews at the BBC, as Radio 2 celebrates her life and career via a wealth of BBC archive material. 90 years old next week, you can hear her interviews with, among others, Nikki Campbell, Sue Lawley and Michael Parkinson. Subjects include her early life in London, discovery of her singing voice aged 12, personal and professional anecdotes involving Hattie Jakes, Tony Hancock, Harry Secombe, Richard Burton, Peter Sellers, Dudley Moore. It's a list of who's who. As I said, it does start at 1am Saturday morning on Radio 2. It could well be worth staying up for, or I'm sure you can track it down on BBC Sounds. That's it. Thank you to Angela for the highlights this week. May I wish you a peaceful, safe and enjoyable one of radio listening.
Now for the audio described television programmes for the week beginning Saturday 20th of September 2025, written by John and read by Chris. Starting with comedy on Saturday the 20th, Channel 4 has Everybody Loves Raymond at 8am, followed by Frasier at 9:25, and then The Simpsons at 10:25. That's assuming you like an early start. Rick Stein is in Cornwall at 11:30 on BBC One. The afternoon film on BBC Two at 1pm is The Railway Children, the classic film from 1970 starring Jenny Agutter. Also at 1, but on BBC One, is coverage of the Athletics World Championships live from Japan. It's not audio described, but commentary from Steve Cran, Colin Jackson and Paula Radcliffe will help you understand the event. Strictly Come Dancing returns with its launch show at 6:40 on BBC One. The celebrities get paired with their professional dancers. The story of how Britain gave railways to the world is told in Britain's Railway Empire in Colour on Channel 4 at 8. This is followed by an action thriller. A former Special Forces operative hopes to end the war between humans and artificial intelligence by destroying the architect of the enemy machines. But will he succeed? Find out in The Creator on Channel 4 at 9. Ian goes on his most frightening heart mission yet in tonight's Casualty on BBC One at 9:20. Although not audio described, Match of the Day returns to BBC One at 10:30. Hopefully the commentary will help you understand what's happening on the field. On to Sunday the 21st. More politicians are put under the spotlight on BBC One at 9am in Sunday with Laura Koonsberg. At 11am on BBC One follows the second day at the World Athletics Championships from Japan. There are three episodes of The Simpsons on Channel 4, starting at 1 o'clock, 1:25 and 1:55. The afternoon film on ITV One takes us to the magical world of Hogwarts, Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets is on at 3:25. What's it like to live on the eastern borders of Europe? Katia Adler finds out what it's like living next door to Putin on BBC Two at 7:10. The documentary series Educating Yorkshire continues on Channel 4 at 8pm. Sir David Attenborough narrates the search of the coelacanth in this one-off documentary. A team using submersibles goes to great depths to find this primeval fish, often described as a living fossil. find out how they get on in Deep Ocean, Kingdom of the Coelacanth, at 8:10 on BBC Two. If you like sport, Freddie Flintoff is organising amateur cricket teams, but in Manchester is facing dwindling numbers, whereas in Blackpool, the girls' team play their first match against a prestigious boarding school. Will they win? Find out in Field of Dreams at 8:15 on BBC One. William and Harold pursue costly alliances against the advice of their womenfolk. King and Conqueror continues on BBC One at 9:15. Rob and Rylan continue their passage to India at 9 on BBC Two. And in Part 10, players with true intentions are revealed in The Inheritance on Channel 4 at 9. Now a look at programmes that are on at the same time each weekday. The following are on BBC One: Bargain Hunt at 12:15, Clean It, Fix It at 2 p.m, but not Friday, Robson Green's Weekend Escapes at 2:30, but not Friday, Escape to the Country at 3 p.m. On other channels, Dickinson's Real Deal on ITV1 at 2, Downton Abbey Series 1 on ITV3 at 3:30, Earth on BBC Two at 4:15, Great Railway Journeys on BBC Two at 6:30, two episodes of Heartbeat on ITV3 starting at 5:50. The soaps are on their usual channels at their usual times. Back to the weekdays, starting with Monday the 22nd. It's brain-teasing time of the week with Mastermind and University Challenge on BBC Two at 7:30 and 8:30 respectively. Jamie concludes his culinary skills by incorporating more white fish into his diet. Jamie, Eat Yourself Healthy on Channel 4 at 8. Rhea is a fugitive and on the run. Fran discovers evidence which will clear her. The guest comes to a conclusion at 9 on BBC One. We've all experienced COVID, but the thinking is there could be another pandemic at some time. Chris Van Tulleken investigates the hunt for the pathogen that could trigger the next pandemic and the cutting-edge science developed to tackle it. Disease X, Hunting the Next Pandemic on BBC Two at 9. The Inheritance reaches its penultimate episode where the players are forced to adapt their strategies, Channel 4 at 9. John, who is full of regret over his friendship with Tommy, tries to share his suspicions with Fiona. Coldwater is on ITV1 at 9. On to Tuesday the 23rd. Stacey and Joe is all about their family this week. How they get on is on BBC One at 8. Michael visits Derby and the largest ever collection of locomotives in one place. Michael Portillo's 200 Years of Railways on BBC Two at 8. Back to school week starts with the lunchbox favourite Flapjacks, culminating in a school fete showstopper. The Great British Bake Off is on Channel 4 at 8. A return to the drama set in a Manchester school starts a new series tonight. New teacher Darius causes a stir in the staff room, and Jack Rimmer tackles his first day as school counsellor. Waterloo Road on BBC One at 9. Part 2 is on BBC One after the news at 10:40. Michael Palin visits a cluster of coral islands in the Caribbean Sea and sees how Venezuela's political situation has devastated the area's tourism industry. Michael Palin in Venezuela is on Channel 5 at 9. The deceased reveals one last ruthless twist in the final of The Inheritance on Channel 4 at 9:15. Now, Wednesday the 24th. MasterChef sends four finalists to Greece and Margie Farm, which supplies produce for some of the finest restaurants in Athens, where they make a delicious lunch for the locals, including the workers of Margie Farm. MasterChef on BBC One at 8. There's a novel take on US President Trump's second term in office, recutting news clips as drama to retell his story. The Donald Trump Show is on Channel 4 at 9. The Honeymooners are related as boats bring their friends and family from the other side of the world. But will their loved ones approve of their new partners? Stranded on Honeymoon Island is on BBC One at 9. There's a third choice at 9, based on a true story. We follow journalist Nick Davis as he receives a tip-off about a phone hacking at Rupert Murdoch's News of the World. The Hack, a new series on ITV One, at 9. When a human torso is found at a Salford beauty spot, a murder inquiry begins. How they get on is revealed in Cracking the Case, The Torso Wrapped in Plastic, on BBC Two at 10. Thursday the 25th. The final four are asked to put a twist on a selection of classic dishes, including beef Wellington. The three successful contestants will head for the kitchens at the Dorchester. MasterChef is on BBC One at 8. Helen is blindsided by a front page article about her mental health. Meanwhile, she focuses on a report about the closure of mental health institutions across the country. The Newsreader is on BBC Two at 9. It's the penultimate part where the islanders have a full moon party, and then the honeymooners leave the beaches and spend time apart to contemplate their relationships. Stranded on Honeymoon Island is on BBC One at 9. Nikki and Davina meet with two parents searching for their children they last saw as babies. Long Lost Family is on ITV One at 9. There's a return to Darabi tonight. James is struggling with a wild, chaotic Siegfried, and when Tristan returns from war, he is shocked at the shift in his brother. All Creatures Great and Small is on Channel 5 at 9. Journalist Callum Leslie, psychiatrist Dr. Soham Das, and former detective Rebecca Mason delve into a police investigation of a series of seemingly unrelated criminal events. 5 years later, one crucial piece of evidence joins them all together. Cracking the Case, The Heist, The Hit, and The Hunt is on BBC Two at 10. How about ending the day with a classic biographical drama? Oscar comes to Krakow with the idea of using cheap Jewish labour, but soon finds it useful to protect his workers. Schindler's List is on BBC Two at 11. And finally, Friday the 26th. A murder at the set of a bawdy film needs the sister's assistance despite her being incapacitated with a leg injury. Sister Boniface Mysteries on BBC One at 2 p.m. It's the final, and there's a nail-biting end, with the finalists having 3 hours to prove they are the best amateur cook in the country. MasterChef is on BBC One at 8. Joel and Prue help Joe Brand and Tom Allen recall events in Back to School Week. The Great British Bake Off Extra Slice is on Channel 4 at 8. Back in civilization, Davina pays a surprise visit to reveal that they will all face one final flare-out. Will they choose to commit to each other in the real world? Stranded on Honeymoon Island, The Final Flare on BBC One at 9. Dale is falling apart and Helen's relationship with Bill deteriorates. The Newsreader reaches its conclusion at 9 on BBC Two. An actor searches for their perfect final words and the late great novelist E.M. Forster makes a surprise appearance in the wrong century. Mitchell and Webb Are Not Helping is on Channel 4 at 10. You could end the week with an action spy thriller. Ethan Hunt is on the trail of his rogue former colleague Sean Ambrose, following the theft of a synthetic virus capable of wiping out the world's population. Mission Impossible 2 is on ITV1 at 10:45. We hope you find something of interest in this week's suggestions.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello everyone, this is 10 Today, a 10-minute set of exercises to do at home to help keep yourself active. Before we get to today's presenter, a couple of housekeeping points to note. The 10 Today project is funded by the Big Lottery and Sport England, and when you're doing the exercises, it's important that you don't push yourself too far, and by taking part, you agree to 10 Today's terms and conditions. You can read these terms and conditions at tnflink.uk/10T, and the 10T is the digit 1, the digit 0, and the letter T. And please remember that you agree to take part at your own risk. Today's exercises are brought to you by Terry, and here he is.
Hello everyone, welcome to 10 Today, broadcast number 2. This is a short 10-minute physical activity routine which will get you moving and stretching. It's great for your health, including improving your balance and building up your strength. Just take it at your own pace. There are plenty of options. If an exercise feels too much, just take it easy and have a break. All the exercises can be done either stood up or sitting down, so just do whatever feels good for you today. We want you all to do this exercise safely. You are responsible for monitoring how you are feeling throughout the session. If you feel any discomfort or pain, for example, if you feel unwell or dizzy or experience palpitations, then please stop and seek medical advice. Please remember you agree to take part at your own risk. If remaining seated, at least to begin with, you should have your feet flat on the floor. It would be ideal if you can use a hard chair that you can sit upright in, which could be a dining chair, preferably without arms, which can get in the way of some exercises. Okay, if you are stood up, just step your feet hip-width apart, relax your shoulders, and stand up nice and tall, and take a couple of deep breaths. If you're sitting down, place both feet firmly on the floor, keep your back straight, relax your shoulders, and take a couple of deep breaths. In and out, in and out. So, the first exercise is called Reach for the Stars. So raise both your arms up to the sky, or stars. When at the top, raise up onto your toes. You can raise up onto your toes if you are sitting or standing, and then lower down both your feet and your arms, pushing down with your palms down. So keep going, raising your hands up, then up on your toes, then lower down your hands and feet. And keep going, feeling that nice stretch through the upper body and shoulders. So just a couple more now. That's great. Well done. Next up, Strike of the Cobra. A wee bit of martial arts. So with a strong stance, standing up tall, with your fists clenched in front of your chest, like you are a boxer, punch your right hand straight out in front of you and return. Then with the same hand, punch it to the left side so your arm crosses your body and reaches towards the ceiling. So you're punching up and across. And return. Now with your left hand, punch straight out and return. Then punch to the right side so your arm crosses your body, reaching for that ceiling again. Try not to worry with the logistics on this one, just energetic punching is good. Keep going now with alternate hands at your own pace. So punching straight out in front of you and then to the side, pointing your fist up to the ceiling. This is great for strengthening those arms. We should all be feeling nice and warm now. Now we have the side stretch, standing or sitting up straight. Raise your right arm high, straight up to the ceiling with your palm facing up. Place your left hand on your hip and then gently lean over to your left side, feeling that stretch all along your right side and return back to the center. Now lower your right arm and place your right hand on your hip and raise your left hand straight up to the ceiling and lean over to the right and feel that stretch all the way down your left side. Now keep alternating, feeling that nice stretch down your side. So arm up, lean over and repeat. Great work. Well done. Next up is swing back. If you're standing, keep your legs straight and your feet facing forward. If you're sitting, keep your feet flat on the floor. So lift your elbows out to the side, raising your hands chest height, and then straighten out your right arm, keeping your left arm bent, and gently swing your right arm back behind you, looking over your shoulder. Then gently swing your right arm back to the center and straighten out your left arm, keeping that right arm bent, and gently swing your left arm back, looking over your shoulder, then swing back to center. Try for a smooth swinging action from side to side. So once again, swing your right arm gently back with your left arm bent, looking at your right arm as you swing back, then swing back to the center and bend your right arm and gently swing your left arm back and then return. And repeat. So you're just moving side to side with a nice, smooth, fluid movement. Swinging alternate arms back, nice and gently, feeling your back rotate as you move side to side. Just a couple more now. This is a great one for trunk rotation. Next, if you're standing, you might want to be near something you can hold on to help with balance. This one is a leg raise. If you're standing, lift one leg with your bent knee up to hip height and return your foot to the floor. And if you're sitting with a bent knee, lift your leg slightly higher than hip height and return your foot to the floor. Now do the same with the other leg, bend the knee, lift up to hip height and return. Now keep going on alternate legs, so really just lifting those legs up. Next is slowly does it. These exercises are slightly different if you are sitting or standing. If you're standing, remember to keep your back straight and keep your feet facing forward, and try not to let your knees move in front of your toes. So if you're standing, bend at your knees slightly and hold, and then bend your knees all the way down to your lowest point and hold, and then straighten up your legs again. So you're just moving halfway, holding, moving down to your lowest point, holding, and then coming back up. Keep going. If you're sitting, just straighten out your right leg right in front of you and hold briefly, feeling that nice stretch down your leg, then return your foot to the floor and repeat on the other side. Whichever variation you're doing, you're working your legs. If you're standing, you're also working your bottom. Okay, so keep going, always remembering to keep your back straight. So for those standing, bending knees halfway, hold and then all the way down and then up. And sitting, raising alternate legs. Slow and controlled is more challenging and rewarding. And just a few more. Well done. Now, it's push up to the moon. So we want a nice soft bend in your knees and a strong stance for this one. Then bend your arms so both hands are at chest height. Then push both your hands up to the ceiling on your right, like you are pushing up to the moon. Then sweep your hands back down and to the left, pushing both your hands up to the ceiling, again on your left. And now keep going. So you're just making a nice big U-shape with your hands, pushing up to the moon on either side. When you sweep your hands at the bottom of the U, you can bend over slightly to make that sweeping movement bigger. Keep going with that nice dynamic shape, pushing up to the moon on each side. So again, if you're standing, you might want to be near something to help with balance. This exercise is called kick across, and you're just standing on one leg and kicking the other leg straight across to the opposite side. So kick your right leg to the left side, keeping it straight, and return and do the same on the other side. So now keep going, kicking that leg across from side to side. You should feel that work in your legs. And again, slow and controlled is more challenging here. Keep going for a couple more. Good work, well done. Next up is full circle. Raise both arms straight up above your head and then sweep them round together to the right, down to the bottom, and back up to the top, making one big circle all the way back up to the top, and keep going, swinging one big circle to the right. Just a couple more in this direction. Good work. Now we're going to do exactly the same, but in the opposite direction. So keep making those nice big circles. It's a great workout for your shoulders, this one. Just a few more now. One more. Great job. Now we really all should be feeling warm. If you're a little out of breath, that's a good thing. It means you've been working. If you're not a little out of breath, can you work a little harder next time? Well done. We're nearly finished. We'll just finish off with a nice stretch and cool down. So we're going to start with a hamstring stretch. So feet facing forward, step forward with your right foot, placing your foot out in front of you with your foot flat on the floor. Keep the right leg straight, then bend your left leg and put your hands on your hips and just lean your chest forward gently. Whether you're sitting or standing, you should feel a nice stretch down the back of the right leg. And now hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1, and finish. Then return to an upright position and swap your legs over. So keeping your feet facing forward, this time step forward with your left foot, placing your foot out in front of you with your foot flat on the floor. Keep this leg straight, then bend your right leg and just lean the chest forward gently. Again, feeling that nice long stretch at the back of the left leg. And hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1, and finish. And the final stretch, hugging a tree. Just hold your arms out in front of you, just like you are hugging a tree, directly in front of you. Your arms form a nice circle in front of you, and then cup your hands together, putting one hand in front of the other, and push your hands together, feeling that nice stretch across your shoulders and arms. And now hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1, and finish. Now sit up or stand up and return to that nice, relaxed posture we had at the beginning. Brilliant! So that was all the exercises. We hope you enjoyed them. Just to finish off, shaking out, just shake those arms and hands and then legs and feet. Great work, everyone. Doing 10 today just 3 times a week can have great health benefits. It's fun and you'll simply feel better. So do keep going. Thank you for listening.
TNF Soundings.
After all that exercise, you're probably ready to relax with a little more music. In this tribute to George Harrison, here's another of his Beatles songs, Here Comes the Sun. There's an Eric Clapton connection here too, although he doesn't play on it. The story is that George wrote it one summer's day, sitting in Eric's garden, playing on one of Clapton's guitars. I've merged 2 versions of the song here, starting with the live acoustic version from the Concert for Bangladesh, played as a duet with Pete Ham, which then segues into Joe Brown's version, played live at the Concert for George, held at the Albert Hall in George's memory a year or so after he died.
Hello, this is Rob, and here are some notable events which happened this week in the past. On the 21st of September 1937, J.R.R. Tolkien's fantasy novel The Hobbit was published. Critically acclaimed and recognised as a classic in children's literature, The Hobbit, which has the subtitle All There and Back Again, is set within a fictional universe and follows home-loving hobbit Bilbo Baggins on his quest to win a share of treasure guarded by a dragon. Due to its enduring popularity, the work has never been out of print and has been translated into over 50 languages and sold over 100 million copies worldwide. On the 22nd of September 1994, the television sitcom Friends debuted on American television. The show featured a group of relatively unknown actors playing six young adults called Rachel, Monica, Phoebe, Ross, Joey and Chandler living in New York City. And it went on to become a huge hit, which lasted for 10 series. The sitcom was so successful globally that by the final series, the six actors, Jennifer Aniston, Courtney Cox, Lisa Kudrow, David Schwimmer, Matt LeBlanc and Matthew Perry were each earning $1 million per episode. More than 50 million viewers tuned in to view the last episode, making it one of the most watched finales in TV history. On the 23rd of September 2000, Sir Steve Redgrave won his fifth Olympic gold medal. He's regarded as one of the greatest ever Olympians and is the most successful rower in Olympic history, having been the only man to have won five gold medals at five consecutive Olympic Games in an endurance sport. Redgrave first won in Los Angeles in 1984, followed by gold medals in 1988, 1992, 1996 and the year 2000, a record span of 16 years from his first to last gold medal. At a ceremony after the 2000 Summer Olympics, he was presented with a gold pin by the International Olympic Committee president in recognition of his huge achievements. On the 24th of September 1952, the world's first Kentucky Fried Chicken franchise opened in South Salt Lake, Utah, in the United States. An American fast food restaurant chain specializing in southern fried chicken and chicken sandwiches, headquartered in Louisville, Kentucky. KFC, as it's now known, is the world's second largest restaurant chain as measured in sales after McDonald's, with over 30,000 locations globally in 150 countries. The company was founded by Colonel Harlan Sanders, an entrepreneur who began selling fried chicken from his roadside restaurant in Corbin, Kentucky, during the Great Depression. Colonel Sanders became a prominent figure in American cultural history, and his image remains widely used in KFC advertising to this day. On the 25th of September 1957, nine black children, who became known as the Little Rock Nine, were finally able to attend Central High School in Little Rock, Arkansas. But they had to be surrounded by more than 1,000 US paratroopers to protect them from segregationist whites. In 1954, the US Supreme Court ruled that segregated schools were unconstitutional, but Arkansas Governor Orville Forbes refused to abide by the ruling. On 2nd of September 1957, Governor Forbes ordered the state's National Guard to stop the Little Rock Nine going into the school. And 2 days later, both the National Guard and a belligerent white mob blocked the entrance so that the black students couldn't enter. Following a plea from Little Rock's mayor, Woodrow Mann, President Eisenhower eventually federalized the National Guard and sent U.S. Army troops to the scene to guard the students and ensure they could gain access to the school and begin regular class attendance. This was a significant moment in the civil rights movement, but unfortunately the Little Rock Nine continued to be consistently subjected to both verbal and physical abuse by many of their white classmates. One of the black students, Melba Patillo, even had acid thrown into her eyes. On the 26th of September 1580, English seaman Francis Drake returned to Plymouth in the Golden Hind and became the first navigator to sail the earth, having set off in December 1577 with five ships to raid Spanish holdings on the Pacific coast of the New World. A series of devastating storms besieged his expedition, but he persevered and eventually returned to England bearing captured treasure and valuable information about the world's oceans. The following year, Queen Elizabeth I knighted Drake during a visit to his ship, and he became the most renowned of the Elizabethan seamen, later playing a crucial role in the defeat of the Spanish Armada. And finally, on the 27th of September 1066, you guessed, the Norman invasion of England began when William the Conqueror's troops set sail from Normandy. The following day he landed at Pevensey in Sussex and seized England from the Anglo-Saxon king Harold Godwinson. The Normans weren't the only ones keen on securing the English throne at that time. The Norwegians, led by King Harald Hardrada, invaded northern England earlier in the month. King Harald defeated them at the Battle of Stamford Bridge on the 25th of September, but at the cost of severely weakening his army immediately prior to William the Conqueror's invasion. William invaded with around 7,000 to 12,000 men and constructed a castle in the area of Hastings, which is where the famous Battle of Hastings took place on the 14th of October 1066. King Harold was killed, purportedly by an arrow to the eye, and William marched on London, eventually receiving the capitulation of the English barons. William was crowned on the 25th of December 1066 and reigned until 1087. The conquest eliminated the English elite and introduced the Norman language to England, changes to governance, and the formal elimination of slavery.
Hello, I'm Sue, and here are some famous people's birthdays for this week. On the 21st of September in 1972, Liam Gallagher was born. He is an English singer and songwriter who is the lead singer and co-founder of the rock band Oasis. Gallagher is one of the most recognisable figures in British rock music and is noted for his distinctive vocal style and outspoken personality. On the 22nd of September in 1958, Andrea Bocelli was born. He is an Italian tenor. He rose to fame in 1994 after winning the newcomers section of the 44th Sanremo Musical Festival. On the 23rd of September in 1968, Yvette Fielding was born. Fielding is an English television presenter, producer, actress, and writer. In 1987, aged just 18, she became the youngest presenter on BBC television programme Blue Peter. On the 24th of September, in 1936, James Henson was born. He was an American puppeteer, animator, cartoonist, actor, inventor, and filmmaker, who achieved worldwide notability as the creator of The Muppets. Henson was also well known for creating Fraggle Rock and as the director of The Dark Crystal and Labyrinth. On the 25th of September, 1944, Michael Douglas was born. Douglas is an American actor and producer. He has received numerous accolades and is the elder son of Kirk Douglas and Diana Dill. On the 26th of September, in 1981, Serena Williams was born. Serena is an American professional tennis player. She was ranked world number one in singles by the Women's Tennis Association for 319 weeks and finished as the year-end number one 5 times. On the 27th of September in 1947, Michael Lee Adey, better known by his stage name Meatloaf, was born. He was an American rock singer and actor and noted for his powerful, wide-ranging voice and theatrical live shows. He is on the list of best-selling music artists. His Bat Out of Hell trilogy has sold more than 100 million records worldwide.
Hello, it's Clive Davis from the Wildlife Sound Recording Society. This month's recording is by our recently retired president, Chris Watson. Chris, who has recorded many programmes for the BBC, introduces and describes recordings that he has made around the world.
Over the past 40 years, I've had the great privilege of recording wildlife sounds on all 7 continents. And in the oceans between both poles. Back at home and after a break, I'm always interested to hear what's been going on in our suburban back garden. I've spent a lot of time recording in the tropics, but I really do relish the four seasons here at 55 degrees north. Several summers ago, I came home one evening and under some fearsome looking brambles beneath a hawthorn bush, I heard this. I hung a mic about a metre overhead and caught a glimpse of 2 hedgehogs nose to nose. Most likely, this was a pair with the male soliciting the female. We've good numbers of pipistrelle bats in the area and a summer roost in the eaves. Here's one group, eager to get out hunting as soon as the daylight fades. Using an audio moth at a high sample rate, I was delighted to record these pipistrelle echolocation signals and contact calls, here slowed down 8 times as the bats hawked up and down the garden. Our back garden has also served as a studio for experimenting with recording techniques. That vulture shriek, recorded in the Masai Mara, was obtained as a result of trying out a pair of personal mics in a turkey carcass after it had served several Christmas meals. When the starlings descended upon it in Newcastle-upon-Tyne, it framed the ideal close perspective I was seeking when back out in Africa. Urban foxes are doing fairly well in our neighbourhood, and on winter nights, the vixens sometimes announce their visits from the path at the end of the garden. It's always a delight that blackbirds and robins are with us throughout the seasons, friends that are always there on my return. The autumn song battles of robins. And the evening competitions as blackbirds roost. As January concludes and territories are fought over, I eagerly anticipate the first song phrases of spring. And it usually comes from one of the branches in the old apple tree. This blackbird was singing out of the chilled pre-dawn darkness. It's one of the most spirited and passionate songs I have ever heard on any continent. And it's right here on my doorstep.
From the Hearts Life archive, here is an article from March 2020 about the Broxbourne Press, read by Rob.
Presses that rolled under Fleet Street are silent, replaced by the likes of Broxbourne's mega newsprinting site, the biggest in the world. We go inside to see the nightly miracle. The words are by Louise McAvoy, photos by newsprinters. Now that's the company that we refer to several times in the article. It's a little known fact that Broxbourne is home to the largest newspaper printing plant in the world, where the majority of the UK's national newspapers are printed. The sprawling 40-acre site is part of a £650 million investment which saw the company Newsprinters establish 19 presses at three UK plants, 12 in Broxbourne, 5 in Liverpool's Knowsley, and 2 in Glasgow. Situated just off the A10 and a stone's throw from the M25, planning permission for the Broxbourne plant was granted in 2005. It took 2 years to build, going into full production in May 2008. Now 3.35 million daily newspapers are printed at the site every weekday, and that's not to mention weekend papers, supplements, and weekly titles. All three sites are highly automated using state-of-the-art technology, and while the Broxbourne site has more than 350 employees, only a handful of skilled custodians are required to keep a watchful eye on the machinery should anything go awry. There are machines for pretty much everything. Every day there are 50 deliveries of blank paper shipped from all over the world, offering different grades and reel sizes, and from the moment the reels arrive, nobody touches them. Floor-level conveyor tracks move the huge reels, which can measure up to 2.21 metres in diameter and weigh up to 2 tonnes, effortlessly to the storage area, before preparation machines unwrap their protective layer prior to the printing process. This uses plates to transfer the layout of digitally designed pages to the paper on vast machines. The whole process is one of rolling movement. Once the newspapers have been printed, they're sorted into bundles, stacked on pallets and wrapped in cling film, again all by machine. Commercial director Tracy Hart says, because it's automated, if it runs well, there's nothing much for the team to do apart from check the density of the ink and observe. And even when things go wrong, they're very calm. Everything is timed to the minute, so any delay, however short, can have far-reaching consequences. Tracy Hart again. We contract every title to a time they must submit all their files, but the flow of files is really important because we need to create the plates for printing. What we want to avoid is file bunching when we receive 52 pages in the last 3 minutes, for instance, because then it's a horrific task. It's not like producing a tin of beans. We create a brand new product every day, and some editors sign off on pages at the last minute, but we still have to meet certain deadlines to get the newspapers to the retailers on time. She adds that things happen that the team can't account for. It's very much reactive and last minute. That's our world. We do have a really energised team who are very engaged because they know any slip of concentration is so impactful. The staff are passionate about what they do, and it's great to work in this print world and to be a part of it. And when that story breaks or when a problem happens, that's the excitement. The night of a general election is always a big buzz, and I remember the atmosphere when the story on Michael Jackson's death broke, as well as the Telegraph's exclusive on the MP's expenses scandal. Today we don't know what tomorrow's front page is going to be and what will drive the news or delay the news. The tight deadlines, which leave very little room for error, have to be met 364 days of the year, pausing only for Christmas Eve. And staff refer to the challenge as, quotes, the nightly miracle. It's essential any problems are dealt with deftly because thousands of copies of newspapers are printed every minute. Newsprinter's customers get a minute-by-minute report, some with live access, and every morning an internal meeting is held to scrutinise the previous night's performance. Business Improvement Director Richard Johnson explains, "We get feedback on performance that the daytime staff analyse, so we're learning and improving day by day. Now, with machines, anything can happen, and the night shift have to mitigate the impact of that. It's amazing how quickly the team can fix a problem with the presses, pulling out any debris and refeeding the paper. But while time is of the essence, it's a balancing act between speed and accuracy." And Richard said, "If you rush putting the plates on the press, you could damage the plates or break the web," that's the paper. While the system is highly automated, skilled printers are essential for the operation to continually succeed. But a significant shift in emphasis from print to digital means printing is a dying art form and recruiting skilled staff is becoming increasingly difficult. "We have an ageing workforce," says Tracy, "and a lack of a pool to go to for trained printers. Young people are not interested, so to find a trained printer is quite hard. The company, Newsprinters, offers an apprenticeship scheme, hoping to entice youngsters into the industry and develop their skills in-house. But revival of interest on a wider scale would be preferential," Tracy admits. The industry has seen declining print sales in the years since the Broxbourne plant was built, due to the explosion of digital news sources. But in that time, Newsprinter's customer base has actually grown, due to the unfortunate demise of smaller printing plants around the country. It also offers an end-to-end service, from printing to distribution, seizing every opportunity to maximise its service. "We want to ensure we optimise everything we do and use from ink to paper," Tracy insists. Even the biggest newspaper printing plant in the world is not without its problems. "The Broxbourne site was built at the height of newspaper print sales," explains Tracy. "It was built for volume at speed with triple-width presses instead of the standard double-width, so we can print a lot faster for the high pagination titles. What we're not so good at is varying trim sizes or inserting supplements and leaflets. And customers want special bespoke things now, and that's been a challenge for us." Another challenge for newsprinters, and one Tracy says is being addressed, is finding ways to reduce its carbon emissions, minimise waste, and increase its green credentials. She says a lot of work has been done to avoid the need to use a chemical solution to clean the blankets which go between the rollers to help ensure pressure is distributed evenly across the plates. "We have to ensure we print the best quality we can, but we've now produced a water wash because we want to be kind to the environment. We've also substituted plastic poly bags with ones made from potato starch. And unsold newspapers are brought back and recycled. We also use aluminium cores for our paper reels, so when a reel ends, the core goes back to the paper mill and is reloaded. Ultimately, we can't change the fact we use paper, but we must do as much as we can for the environment." This Hertfordshire printing plant, colossal in its size and capability, and adapting to changing demands from clients, is still for now at the heart of the UK newspaper industry. When we open up tomorrow's newspaper, perhaps you should consider the nightly miracle that took place to make it. And there are some numbers, some very large numbers, about this print site. The size of the Broxbourne site in acres is 40. The initial build cost was £187 million, and a further £161 million was invested in equipment, including those triple-width presses, which can print up to 86,120-page full-colour newspapers every hour. 3,350,000 copies of daily newspapers are printed per day, and 3,780,000 weekend newspapers are printed each week, plus supplements. 900 million newspapers are printed each year, creating 300,000 tonnes of newsprint. Titles include The Sun, The Times, The Telegraph, The Daily Mail, The London Evening Standard, Metro and The Financial Times. 1.1 million full-colour, 120-page newspapers can be printed every hour. 3,860,000 rolls of blank paper measuring up to 2.21 metres in diameter and weighing up to 2 tonnes can be stored at any one time. And 180 reels per hour are handled by 6 real preparation machines.
Thanks, Rob. We're nearing the end of this week's programme. It just remains for me to thank our contributors, Jenny, Liz, Lucy and Sarah, for reading the news, The Heart's advertiser for providing it. Thanks to John and Angela for the radio listings, and our friends at Wharfdale Talking News for the audio-described TV listings. TNF Soundings for 10 Today, and the Wildlife Sound Recording Society for their evocative recordings. Rob read the events in history, and Sue presented famous birthdays. Thanks to Liz and Richard for copying and distributing the USB drives. Mark will be here next week with the quarterly magazine, but that's all from me in September 2025. We close with a little more music from George Harrison, Something, from the Abbey Road album. You know, the one which has the 4 Beatles crossing Abbey Road on the cover. There is an Eric Clapton connection here too, in that it was written for Patty Boyd, who married George, but later, after their divorce, married Eric, who apparently was quite obsessed by her. He wrote Layla for her, as well as Wonderful Tonight. But they are for another day. Anyway, I hope you enjoy Something. Don't forget to let us know about music you'd like to hear, and we'll do our best to play it for you. Goodbye for now, and keep well.
Attracts me like no other lover. Something in the way she woos me. I don't want to leave her now. You know I believe in how. Shows me.